Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann. I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, go Padres. Is this what go we can Padres. Look forward to next year, Nick? Is this winning, man. Just constant winning?
Yeah, we're building a culture right now. We're on our way to 500. Just San Diego Sport, another San Diego Sports story, just on our way to the middle. That's what we're doing. But it's been a weird week in Padre land. We have the hottest team in baseball somehow. And we have a very special guest on the Kept Faith Podcast, a returning guest, someone who's done it live, Kevin Acey from the Union Tribune. What's up?
Hey, I'm, I'm hanging in. We got a little ways to go and a lot to talk about.
Yeah, we wanted to check in with you just to talk about Padre baseball, just a general, hey, what's going on? We haven't had you on in a while. And when we asked you, we didn't really know that you were going to drop a pretty big story in the sports section about the culture of the San Diego Padres and focusing on Manny Machado. Hey, Kevin, how was your weekend going through this?
Yeah, it was exactly or very much like I expected it to be. I mean, you don't do something like that story lightly, and you know that there will be pushback, but also everyone involved knew what was coming. And, a lot of the principals knew almost exactly there were no surprises to them. And so when I say I knew that it would go exactly as I a lot like I thought, that's both the pushback and the fact that I knew that I had the story locked down and that people would say that I got it right.
Yeah. I mean, this has been a really tumultuous, kind of a bizarre season for the San Diego Padres. This is your sixth season covering the team?
Yep.
Of any sports season covering a professional team sport, I mean, have you ever seen anything like this where statistically that there's a lot of things in the team's favor and it's just a kind of a bizarre outcome that might have some more internal problems that you've brought to light?
Yeah. Every losing season has similarities, right? Like even this has some similarities to 2021. Also very different. There were some Chargers seasons that, look at how good the stats were and yet the record wasn't, and, turnovers or quote unquote bad luck. When I covered the Angels, they had a history of collapsing, and, there's always some similarities, but always differences. And certainly somewhere I wrote one story saying in spring, maybe some things aren't shaping up expectations, but I don't think any of us envisioned this. So this has been a surprise.
Yeah. And, your piece is a real examination on how, how the most talented players on a team can lead a baseball team. I mean, through your experience covering this franchise, what's the greatest example of leadership that you've seen and that you've covered since you've been here? Has there been anything, even before Manny Machado was there, you have a year before him, but has there ever been something that you would call that you think you could evaluate as pure effective leadership?
It's so difficult because they haven't been good, right? Like they've only been good for a little while. Look, it's like you're setting me up, but there was a lot of good a certain guy did. He wasn't a very good player when he got here, Eric Hosmer, okay? But there was a lot of good he did. Craig Stammen is a good leader. There are different ways to lead. Manny is a leader. Now, Manny happens to be the kind of leader that fits very much what Manny is, right? Goes and in their awesome qualities, he's good. He plays every day, which means he plays hurt, but he finds a way to play. These are, he cares about winning. These are good traits, but they're maybe not the leader that the Padres need. And I made the point in the story, and gosh, several of my, hundreds of other stories have pointed out that their biggest problem is that Manny didn't hit like he was supposed to, and Xander Bogaerts didn't hit like he was supposed to for a lot of the season. Juan Soto didn't hit in the way that he was supposed to. Maybe Tatis was a tad disappointing. It's tough to hold him to the fire too much for this first season. Jake Cronenworth. I mean, basically, Ha-Sung Kim and Gary Sanchez are the only guys that outperformed what would be expected of them. And so that's their biggest problem. But that is why many people inside of the clubhouse around baseball say that that's when you need a different kind of leadership. And when does it show up that you don't have those? It's in one run games. It's in extra innings. It's in not being able to come back. And it's in those types of things that this team was bad at. You don't need a whatever type of leadership, like you don't necessarily need it. If Manny's OPS is 898 and Juan's OPS is 900 and, you know, Tatis is hitting 40 home runs and Xander Bogaerts is having a typical year with a, like a, whatever it is, 850 OPS, like, and Jake Cronenworth is getting clutch hits. It's like, guess what? Like any of us on this podcast could be the leader of that team. This team needed something more that it didn't have. It did not find from within. That was the message that I got from several people and the message that I tried to impart.
Yeah, I try to be the leader on this podcast. I send out the texts. I send the
texts. It's clear.
And, you know, yeah. I retweet the other podcasts. I just try to, you know, when the other guys on the show have to talk to somebody, they can talk to me, you know. But anyways, I think that's interesting because, you know, Manny Machado in the piece, he does seem to have a simplified idea of what leadership is, and he has a simplified idea of what went wrong this year. It's just, he goes back to it many times in the piece where he says, I didn't perform, and I think,
right.
I took that as a, you know, I think that's the type of leadership I might respond to, but yeah, I guess there's a spectrum of the way these guys interact and maybe they need more.
Absolutely. There are guys on the team that believe that Manny is sufficient, right? Like, mm-hmm. and that type of leader, they're like, I bring up this example and maybe it's a bad one, but I'm trying to make it so that people under, like, Andy Green is one of the finest human beings that I've ever known, right? That mm-hmm. would have been a sufficient leader for me. Mm. Now, it's a bad example because Andy wasn't going to survive. Okay. But I'm trying to make is Andy did not have the people in that clubhouse following him. So Andy wasn't a good leader for this team. Right. So the fact that I and some other people in there thought that like Andy Green was the kind of guy that we would follow, matter, you know? Yeah. So, there's other things and there are other stories coming, but I mentioned in the piece that, you know, I try to make it clear all the positives with Manny or many of the positives, and that this wasn't about him per se. And also AJ Preller put this team together. We need to examine that. Bob Melvin was the manager and was brought in for a certain reason with experience. And we need to examine that. And you know, that there were some other teammates that perhaps could have stepped into the void as well. But the big thing was that Manny is such a presence on that team for better and, at times for worse, that was a kind of a hurdle that they didn't navigate it this year. Everybody, Manny and others.
Right. I mean, do you think, like, you know, you covered the Chargers in this town, and I was just curious, like, do you think that it's easier for like a player like a Philip Rivers who has a leadership role on the field? Do you think it's just generally easier to have that sort of leadership position in a football locker room than a baseball locker room? It seems like these guys are kind of siloed off on the field in a way that leadership might be harder to translate to other people.
That's so fair. I mean, that's so fair. Like, I ask that question and I ask that question among certain people, like, and we all are kind of, those of us of like mind are like, what does that have anything to do with when you're up there batting, right? Like, but the guys who do this for a living and who have been on successful teams, right, say that it can make a difference in crucial moments and in crucial games. And that's what I have to go on based on the fact that, like, these are the guys that the reason that I'm on the road 150 nights a year, the reason that I spend hours of my day every day talking with these guys is so that, like, I can gather the information and learn, like, okay, so what I've never been a professional baseball player, but like I talked to a bunch of them, right? And I talked to a bunch of coaches, I talked to a bunch of scouts and executives. And so I try to gather all this information. And for the purpose of this story, overwhelmingly talked about a certain type of leadership that can make a difference in certain games. And like I said, like, it doesn't have to show through, or like it doesn't even have to come into play if your big four is performing at the way that it, you know, let's be honest, is supposed to, right? We don't have to qualify it like they could, or, you know, no, they should have performed at that level. And if they were, yeah, you know what? And I said it to Manny, like, you're right. I wouldn't be writing this, because last year I was close to writing a story that had similar facets, and they started to win. They started off super hot. Hosmer was out of his mind. Machado was, you know, playing like Machado. They won a bunch of close games. Everybody was buying into what Bob Melvin was saying. Everybody was on their best behavior, and they were, what, 17 over in June. Then they played at 3 under for 3 months, and it was, and there were some of these same rumblings that were happening. And it was like, oh man, really? And like, I remember having to cover the end of 2021. And I was like, oh man, here we go again. And then they started to win. And, you know, I think I referenced this in the story that maybe it masked some things, right? And that is something that I've been told. That's not just what like I said, but like, so, It is fascinating. I think that's such a valid question. And there were guys, there wasn't a single guy I talked to that did not agree that Manny's dominant presence, that Manny's got a different leadership style, that it's Manny's clubhouse. Some are not the type of guys that need to be like, don't give a crap, like what you're doing. They're going to go out and play if I told them to go out and play. And some guys are like that, but they also, being veterans, understand that not everybody's like that. There are guys in there that are just like, I call baseball players necessarily self-centered. It's such an incredibly difficult game. It's such a mental grind. They need to be that way. And so some of them don't see past themselves, and that's totally fine. That's, you know, where they're at their optimum. Other guys, maybe they don't necessarily need the motivation, but like they see, hey, this is what makes a team at its best, and this is what we don't have.
Yeah. Well, I noticed something. Oh, sorry, Travis. What?
I was just going to say this year is quite different, and mainly to me because of the money involved. And I know that in the baseball world, maybe these players are used to that kind of money, but there's something, the criticism gets to a different level when you're talking about $30 million a year for some of these guys. And I know the professional baseball players, and we should go with that. But to me, and maybe there's not, but there seems to be a point where you're making so much money and you're such a professional player that there needs to be like a change in direction. And not necessarily in like the team structure or anything, but just in your routine. And I know that Manny says, like, I have my routine and it's going to change. And when we're raking in the future, you know, don't come bandwagoning. But when you're dealing with a team that's spending $260 million, is there any sense in the players or anything that we need to change course as a team? We need the mannequin with all the dress and all the parts that's going to get ripped off. And maybe I'm just a silly fan, but the money to me makes it a different discussion, because there's so much money involved that even if you don't change your routine, you got to do it because so much is on the line.
That's really interesting. And I don't think that you're that, like, I don't think that you're off base. Like, I don't know that anyone necessarily wants to change. If we're talking about Manny, and it sometimes makes me uncomfortable that we would just be talking about Manny, because, you know,
right.
But the fact is, he is the $35 million a year man. They did talk a lot about leadership when at the press conference. And what these guys need to remember is, if you're at the press conference taking the accolades and the money, that comes with a lot of responsibility. And I've had these conversations with a few guys, and some get it and some don't. It's never been about the money for me. I've been around this for a long time. And if someone's willing to pay you 35 or 25 or 18 or whatever, then that's what you're worth and that's what you should make. But at some point, it does become about the money when you're the highest paid guy, or when you have a record-breaking contract for your position, or you've been given enough money that it's like a position thing for you, like your place on the team is solidified. Then you know what? It kind of does become about the money, because that's how you have been shown to be valuable, and your value is, I'm sorry, at $35 million, greater than the guy at 1 or 3 or 4 million. It is, and that's your place. And so, well, no one wants to change Manny, because I'm very fond of saying this, because I love it, and I like the most games, and now maybe it's changed since he's been down every 3 days lately, but I don't think it has. Most games in the major leagues over the past 9 seasons, while amassing the 9th highest WAR. So playing every day while being one of the best players in the game. Manny, you do you. I mean, God bless him. Like, you Holy, do yeah. you. Your point, and it's the point of some people in the clubhouse, there maybe sometimes does have to be a change, right? Like, sometimes you do need to do certain things to show the team a certain way. One of those things might be being showing up on time. One of those ways just might be being a part of the group. Or it might be having someone else be the leader in a certain situation or something. So yes, some things need to, from my understanding, again, this is not Kevin Acey. As much as I know about this team, there's a lot that, you know, goes on that like, I know I've never been a ball player. I'm not in every meeting. I'm not in any meetings, actually. But this is what ball players say. This is what people around the organization say. And so I do think that there's merit in that.
Well, I think your article is kind of a little proof positive in my direction. Like, they haven't lost since that came out, and if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I mean, you saved the season. You say,
yeah, I mean, and I'm not at all criticizing you, but you know, at that article would have been awesome at like the trade deadline or whatever. So,
oh, can you imagine the backlash had I done it then? And I do want to make that point, as I made it to people as I was reporting. And by the way, there's 2 points actually. And when I say I made it to people as I was reporting, like, there were people asking me to write this story inside the organization, like asking me to write this story and facets of this story, as I pointed out in there. Okay, it was important to them. We can all have our thoughts on that, but that's just facts. The other thing is, I pointed out to Manny and to others, like, this is stuff I've been hearing since last year, and then specifically about this team since April, and it's freaking September. Like, I waited, man. I'm not the guy who needs to break every story and drop every bomb. I'm the guy who needs to, in my opinion, my job is to light a hell of a lot and to give you as much information about the team as I possibly can and be there for when the big stuff happens that I can give context to it. And I think that that's what I'm doing here. And I waited until basically like the season was over. It's to tell this story. I will say that it was positively received, and from my understanding, that it has been used as the start of an impetus to address some things. I don't know where it goes from there.
Yeah. And one other point, I don't want to drive home the money thing too hard, but there's a lot, especially on Padres Twitter, there's a sense in the Padres community that the owner, Seiler, is just spending all of his money, and they are recouping their costs. And I think I've basically paid for Manny's salary and my beer consumption at Petco this year. So I guess my point in bringing up the money so much is, it's the Padres are not spending money and not passing it off to the fans and the season ticket members and all those things. And so that's where I do get a little more riled up, where Padres Twitter and a lot of that is, you know, people that just watch it on TV.
I respect that, and it's something I've always, you remember my boss Jay Posner, he's for a long time been a half season ticket holder, right? That's a guy who puts his money where his mouth is, right?
40 plus years of season tickets here. Yeah.
Right. I put my time where my mouth is, like, right? Like I have zero life, but I go to games for free. Okay. And I'm not invested in the way, like, you know, I wear a lot of brown and go to games and all that's like, you know, and pay what you guys pay. And I always try to remember that and respect that and realize that people have their right and they've paid for that right through dedication and financially to be angry or gosh, to then feel rewarded when the series like the Dodgers happen. So I do want to point out that it's going to take a few more seasons like this to pay Manny and Xander's and, you know, to keep paying for these contracts. That does not come back in 1 year. So they need to. I think they're going to do well based on what I hear. I'm still reporting that out. But I think they're going to do well again next year. Now, if they don't win, I think we've all been around San Diego long enough to know that I don't know how long that's going to last, the 50 sellouts. So, and I do believe that they are well aware of that.
Well, going back to like clubhouse dynamics, you know, part of the story that I thought was really interesting is that Manny maps out a leadership class that it goes beyond just the money that you're talking about, Travis. It's the time that there's a few players that are basically locked in for the rest of their professional lives with the Padres, for better or worse, however that pans out. In the list of names, he names Bogey and Cronenworth and Joe Musgrove. And he does leave out Juan Soto because Juan Soto's not, he's not connected. He's not in that group. I mean, do you notice any, not just with Juan Soto, but like with the rest of the clubhouse, do you notice in the response to your story or any just observations throughout the time you spent there, do you notice like a fracturing between the guys that are yoked up for long periods of time and the ones that are still trying to establish themselves in the game?
Not down those lines. And I didn't catch it at the time that he said it, so I can't speak exactly to why Soto was left out. My interpretation was what I think I heard you say, is that he mentioned guys who were going to be here.
That's what he said. He said guaranteed to be there. Right. Yeah, guaranteed to be here.
Right. So that's what I took out of it. So I look, are there guys who would have liked to have gotten some contracts? Yeah, sure. You know, that's I haven't noticed a fracturing of that. I also want to be clear, and I mentioned it in the story, that I did see for myself, and I was told by people I trust that there, for the by and large, as much as on any other team, for the most part, guys do like each other. They might not be as close as some of them feel they should be, right? Or spend as much time together as they should be, or that some of them feel they should be. There might not be best friends. There might be some, you know, situations in there, but that's every team. It's another reason I took this long on this story is I know that there's problems, quote unquote problems, with every team. And I don't want to blow them out of proportion on the team I cover, right? Without knowing like being able to put them in context. But I did see, and also had it confirmed for me, that through the year too, that certain guys did try to work on their relationship. I saw that. And so I don't want it to be out there that anyone is confirming that, oh man, these guys hate each other. And as far as I look, there's a lot of stuff I hear and know that I don't write. But like, as far as I hear and know, like, it's not any worse in most instances than on any other team as far as that goes. And I want to make it clear, I think it was, but sometimes I'm confused as to how people can read something and not understand what it said. I was not putting out there that these guys don't like each other.
I didn't think it that way, but yeah.
Okay.
I get what you're saying.
it's almost like two like perfect tens that go on a date, right? And they like everything there about each other, and the chemistry is just not there. Like,
but it's everything not just on the paper money, right?
Perfect.
Right. It's not just the money. It's the fact that they know that they're going to be there, and that they're stuck in a relationship with the organization no matter what. And what power does a player at the stature of Manny Machado or Tatis or any of these guys who are married to this team, essentially, like, what kind of power do they have if the organization does not want to sour that and go to lengths to not sour that? Could that rub off on people? That's kind of more what I was asking.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I here's something that I've heard kind of suggested to me that like there are some guys in there that need to be empowered to be the leader, that there's leadership skills and potentials inside of Tatis, right? Like, Bogarts, Cronenworth, like that there's like real potential inside of these guys and it can work with Manny's leadership and that this really can be a positive and that, you know, that there's some different people that maybe have some responsibilities for that. I think it'll be interesting going forward. I felt this was an important story and I felt that way because of the people that I talked to that felt that it was important. But there are other things that have been addressed and that will be addressed here shortly. That the Padres are trying to learn from and get better from going forward.
There was one part of the story where, you know, you mentioned Manny Machado was getting messaging from as kind of the advocate, as the player representative in the overall conversation with the organization. I mean, is that something to do with, you know, we've heard, I think Dennis Lind wrote about it, where there is a fracture between, you know, Bob Melvin and AJ Preller. Is there any reason to believe there would be messaging going around the manager in that way, or that you've seen or heard about?
No, that's not what I was referring to. And I was more like the way that Bob goes about like communicating, right? Like Manny's the presence in the clubhouse. So Manny gets some messaging, right? Uh-huh. Also, there's leeway in how Manny is allowed to do things because, again, that whole last 9 years, most games, and also playing hurts this year, last year too, and so there, it's just a different way that Manny is allowed to go about things, and a lot of that, again, I know that most people have no problem with it. Should there maybe be some deviations to that at times, and especially when things aren't going well, then that was more like the thing that some people wanted to see. But in terms of, Dennis's story had a lot of interesting stuff in there. There's a lot of stuff that didn't surprise me one bit. And I think there's more to my story and there's more to Dennis's story. there's more to come. And I get frustrated by that sometimes. And I'm sure other writers do too, that, you know, not every story can have everything in it. Like, right. Totally. You know, yeah. did you catch the 500 stories I've written since April? Like, right. I mean, like, not every story can have everything in it. So
we're not writing Lord of the Rings here, right? Yeah. It's a,
you know, it's what though? Like that's how I look at in covering a beat is sort of like writing the book on the season, but it's like five pages at a time, right? Like every day, right? Like
totally.
You know, I get this crazy editor who wants me to turn in all these pages a day. But I would love that if it was a book at the end of the season, man, that would be so awesome.
This season could be for sure.
Yeah. You should release volumes of the newsletter, maybe. But it was announced this week that Peter Seidler wrote a memo to the fans, basically explaining his situation, which is a serious situation that we should all, you know, we hope he gets better. He's done a lot for San Diego on the field and off the field, and
definitely.
Yeah, you had a really good relationship with Ron Fowler. Have you noticed a shift in the organization since he stepped away as far as accountability and like communication within the levels of the organization? Have you noticed anything that's changed with Peter at the helm at all?
You know, in some ways, Peter's more hands-on. In some ways, Peter's more hands-off. I've always had a very good relationship with Peter as well. Peter does sort of like has empowered people and it's become important for him to have Eric Grubner and AJ Preller be more of the front facing, you know, though Peter does talk more than some owners. I get a lot of emails about, hey, why isn't Seidler talking? And it's like, you know, I think we're all spoiled a little bit by the ownership here recently. I'm not sure how Moff and John Morse talked I don't, if you, I know that people don't take 30 papers, or, you know, check out 30 athletic sites, but I'm not sure how many times you see the owners of other teams talking. Yeah. So like, it's kind of special that what we have here, but to your question, yeah, there's different ways that things have been done. I think maybe some for the better and maybe some that like they lost a certain thing, but Ron was a businessman, right? Like a very successful businessman. Like sometimes that in baseball, like, you know, like Peter's made the fans happier, right? Like, there's different ways. I think to me, it's a shame that Ron has gotten lost in some of this. Like, you know, he had a pretty big part in the transformation too. But Peter Seidler will be the one that, you know, when they do finally have the parade and Peter decides whether it's on land or sea, Peter will be deservedly the one who goes down in history as the owner that took him there.
Yeah. Well, it does seem like that for most Padres fans that are ready for a new general manager, they blame all of this on AJ Preller. That the central problem is that Peter just really likes AJ. And I mean, for everything that we've seen, it seems like that's still the case. What do you think happens moving forward with this offseason? Is AJ just going to have the same license to do what he wants to do moving forward? I saw in your newsletter that there is talk basically having a payroll reduction going into next season. That might be the plan, but what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah. And I think that's certainly been presented more firmly and from more people than last year, where I think all of us reported that they weren't expected to go up very much. And then I try to qualify everything now. And when I speak, like put a verbal asterisk of how the heck should any of us know what Peter Seidler and AJ Preller are going to do. But the word is roundly that they will shed some payroll. That still probably means a top 10 payroll, just not, you know, top three. I know that's going to be alarming to people. Look at some of the teams that are going to the playoffs this year. How about you just do a better job of spending your money? So I don't think that final number should be the thing. And I think that people should be heartened. I mean, to me, it's common sense. It's not like they're going to, it's not a fire sale. They have a bunch of guys with no trade clauses. They have a bunch of guys early and long-term deals. They're not, you know, getting rid of the four tops here. This is like, it's still going to be a core. And then they believe very strongly, maybe this ties in a little bit to the future of AJ Preller. They believe very strongly in their farm system and that at some point next year and 2025, this will be a roster that is sort of supplemented by really quality, low-priced young players, because young and low-priced are the same thing in this context. So they don't want to start over. They do believe that like, look what they've done. Look what this man and his staff have done. They gave away they sold off everything to get these veteran players. Now we'll take that. It hasn't really worked yet so much, and we'll set that aside. But they did that, had this whatever farm system that they always said was better than the rankings and stuff. But now, whoa, now even the rankings people are recognizing that a year later, they're back with a top five farm system or whatever, and two of the 10 best players and prospects. And so like they are heartened by that. They're excited about that. That's something they've been talking about, is the young pitching coming up. And Jeff Sanders obviously keeps track of the names and all that better than me, but like these things that you keep hearing. And then what I like is that when you have people in the organization talking about it, and then people outside the organization say, yeah, that's some pretty good stuff going on there. That's the kind of thing that the Padres and Peter Seidler is looking at going, you know, I do believe in what AJ is doing. Yes. To your question, I don't think he's going to go about it the same way as last year. Look what they tried to do. Remember this. Manny didn't get done until freaking March. They tried to go get They tried to go get Aaron Judge, Trey Turner. They tried to go get some different guys. A couple years ago, they've tried to get quality players with big personalities to come in and be alongside Manny. And you know what? Xander had a lot of complications this year, like the wrist. He was new. First time after 15 years, half of his life, being in the same organization on the East Coast, came out here. There was just a lot new this year. I'm not making a judgment, so I'm certainly not absolving him or blaming him. I'm just saying, like, maybe next year there will be more from Xander in terms of presence. I don't know, but that's certainly something that's been theorized to me by people. And he is a real quality individual. And I've had players say, I'd follow that guy. That guy works a lot, and that guy does it right, and that guy's personality, like, players, like, I think they're waiting and wanting Xander Bogaerts to take more of a role on the team.
Yeah, well,
I don't know how I got on Xander. I think it was on the offseason splurge, and it made me think, wow, they spent $280 million on Xander Bogaerts, and so then I wanted to talk about Xander a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, but Everybody's going to be 40 at some point on this team.
Well, there's what some players have said to me, is like, they know, like, everyone in the organization knows this is a wasted opportunity. You don't have a big four all the time, right? Like, yes. The Dodgers have a big two, and those two guys are badass. I don't care how you feel about the Dodgers. Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman are
unreal,
carrying that team. They're freaking awesome. But there's some really good players and an incredible group that are on the Braves. But see, those teams are headed to the playoffs, so they didn't waste anything. The Padres wasted this. And part of the feeling of that is everyone knows. I've never talked to Manny about it. I have talked to some other players. Everyone knows those guys were signed for the first 3, 4, maybe 5 years of their contracts.
Right.
So one of those has ticked away. All right.
Right.
So, you know, they're very aware of that the end of this contract is not what this is about. That Albert Pujols contract was a disaster because the Angels didn't win any World Series, didn't go to the playoffs barely at all, didn't win any World Series. It didn't matter if Albert Pujols hit 0-0 at the final years of the contract, if they won 2 World Series while he was there. And so that's 100%. What the Padres are banking on. So,
yeah. Well, hey, this is some great stuff, Kevin, and I can't wait to, you know, see what else you got up your sleeve as far as if there's going to be anything coming down the pike. But I saw, you know, this is your first year with a new podcast partner. How's it been going with the rookie?
He's a jackass. my new boss, Ryan Finley, he is a lifelong San Diegan. He knows more about Padres history than I do. You guys could have him on one time
and talk about
the 80s, the 90s. Okay, so he knows. He's very enthusiastic. Happy to have him, and I'm also very happy for him to be back in San Diego because he really does love San Diego. I'm always busting him about Arizona, but he is a San Diegan at heart. Yeah. Big San Diego State guy.
He's uni cathedral trash, but we like him anyways. You know,
he's had that challenge of Jay's just a cynic at heart. I think anyone knows that. You follow him on Twitter, you heard him on the podcast, whatever. Ryan went from a lifelong of like heartbroken Chargers fan, right? Like that they left, lifelong Padres fan, to now journalist, you know, in charge of the sports section that covers the Padres. And so he's making that transition, but he's a good guy.
And you know, we've all seen kind of the changes that have been happening at the paper, and we all have friends that have, you know, had life-changing moments with, you know, what's everything that's been going on with the paper. So, you know, support local journalism. You might get stories like what he dropped on Friday. So
Elon is going to start charging for Twitter. Don't understand how the folks who like constantly say, like, how could newspapers charge? Like, I don't understand how they're going to, like, how's this going to work out? I'm fascinated by it.
Well, you told Manny you're going to be with him for a long time. I mean, I hope you are, you know.
He said that I'm going to outlast him. I don't think so. We'll see. We'll see. Speaking of like inner, you know, exchanges between Manny and I've told writers for 5 years now, mm-hmm. I love covering that guy. And I've told this, I'm not going to say anything here I haven't said to Manny. He's a pain in the ass. And I love it. I have so much fun with him, sparring with him. Does he tick me off? Yes. He doesn't need to be the way he is sometimes, mm-hmm. but he's funny. And he made the team that I cover relevant. I used to joke because I missed baseball so much during the 20 years that I stopped covering it, that I loved covering even bad baseball. But, you know, watching the 2018 and 19 Padres in August and September was rough. Yeah. Manny changed everything, and I will be eternally grateful to him for that. And he knows that no matter where we go, and he and I have had us conversations in recent days, but wherever we go, I will always be grateful for it. I'll always be fair to him. You may have noticed that I spend a lot less time on social media recently for my own mental health. But I unfortunately have these people who, you know, make sure that I hear a lot of these things, that that this was a hit piece on Manny because of how he treats me. And I guess they haven't noticed that he pretty much does that with everyone. But I also did want to, whether you believe me or not, and I realize that a lot of people just don't believe what they hear, I enjoy the heck out of covering that guy. It's as honest as I can be, is to say exactly what I've told them. Man, you are a pain in the ass. But, you know, I really love covering that guy.
Well, we love watching him, you know. I mean, when he got signed, I drove to like five people's houses and got clips, you know, because I'm a leader. I'm a leader on the podcast. That's what you mean. Well, hey, thanks, Kevin. You can follow Kevin. You can follow his newsletter and all the coverage that UT does. Buy a physical newspaper. Come on, guys. We got to keep this thing going.
Or just go online. Me, the papers pile up at the end of my driveway. It's like super long. And but like online, it's like $90 a year. Do the math. Divide that by 365 or by 52 and divide that by between Jeff and I, 1,000 stories a year. Like, anyway, thanks for the
fun. Yeah. It's four beers at Petco. I mean, it's not
a sacrifice at all. Perspective. I love perspective.
Cool. Yeah, we'll be back probably at the after the end, let's let the season end, Travis. What do you think? We'll just kind of come back and dig through the ashes and or maybe, you know, we'll do a playoff preview because we still got a shot. So who knows? All right. Follow us on thekentfaith.com and Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And keep the faith. You know, it's still a thing to do in San Diego. Good night.
Go Padres. Bye. Bye.